You've found the podcast where driving matters. Whether you haul, commute, or cruise, we want you to love what you drive.
We're here to help you find usability and fun. From first-time buyers to jaded experts, we believe everyone is one great car away from being car-obsessed. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
And then there was podcasting, and it was good. Happy Friday. Welcome back to the podcast. We've done that thing where we've been talking for a couple hours already. We think we've gotten some things solved, but we wanted to share many things with you, including a couple of great car debates.
We do have things solved. Everything's solved.
It's solved. Middle East solved. Finally. COVID solved.
That's right.
Think of it. We solved it. That happened the last half hour. We just got excited and we solved it. Yeah, it's done. Don't ask. We just know that it is.
Exactly. Well, Season 10, Episode 4 is the Honda Civic Si versus the Mark 8 Volkswagen GTI.
Civic duty.
Civic duty.
Happening tomorrow morning.
Yes. That's airing on the Motor Trend Cable Channel Saturday, January 22nd at 7:30 a.m. Eastern. We will soon enter a period of reruns, so if you've missed any of these episodes, you will be able to see them again. But that is the debut of that interesting episode. We had a lot of fun. We went to Los Angeles and drove them there back in November. So hopefully you guys catch that soon to streaming and YouTube as well.
Absolutely.
So our lag time is becoming a lot more compressed, so that's good
news. Sure.
And we also just reviewed the Utes.
We did. We got all Utey.
Utequacity, as you would say.
Easy.
Utequaciousness.
These are words I'm making up for fun.
Utapalooza is what we did.
Yeah, what happened.
It's the Ford Maverick versus the Hyundai Santa Cruz. And we'll continue to invent more Ute words.
We will. It's ridiculous. We actually really enjoyed driving those two. We had them back to back. It was very, very interesting to drive them back to back at a cool location here in Utah. And we will have that probably. We're debating. It'll come to YouTube and to TV. We're just not sure what order. It might be TV first. It might be YouTube first. It's depending on when we get it done. But we wanted to shoot it right now because we had them both right now.
Well, also the reason is they're right on people's minds right now.
Yep.
They're just beginning become available. You're starting to see both of them around town. People want to know. We'll decide on that very quickly. If you have a preference one way or the other, let us know. Drop us an email, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com, along with your car debates. Speaking of which, we've got Adam F. in Wisconsin, who's looking to spread his wings. I believe I can fly.
Easy. No, we can't reference him anymore.
And get the car I've always wanted.
He's very, very much in prison. Yeah. We can't do that anymore. Or maybe we can. Maybe there's nobody to come sue us. Maybe we could sing that whole song. I don't know. It depends on how it goes. Yeah.
Anyway, he wants to get the car he's always wanted. So we've got that debate. And also Tim F. in Hong Kong, writing with ideas for a budget supercar for the city.
I'm very intrigued by that because I feel like he's created a problem for himself that's difficult to solve, but we'll get there. We'll get there for sure.
Adam writes to us as a short-time listener, but he says we become his go-to show. Adam, thank you so much.
That's very cool. Thank you, man.
Really appreciate it. He's 31. He's always been a car fanatic. And growing up, his family was always against his hobby.
Isn't that interesting?
So he had to keep it on the down low, very minimal.
Okay. All right.
Now he's single. He's got a decent job. He's always dreamed of owning some sort of race car.
Okay.
But as he's aged, this dream has slowly changed from owning a race car to just wanting a nice street car.
Because when you're a kid, you think, I'm going to own an F1 car.
True.
And I'm going to drive it to the store for milk.
I'm going to put headlights on that thing.
And then reality dawns.
Drive under that nearest truck.
You know it. You realize that's really not going to work. So this is the progression. It's great.
Well, he says hopefully he can take to some of the semi-local tracks in his area. He's close to Blackhawk Farms Raceway in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's cool.
But if he wanted to drive further, Road America.
Awesome. That's a great one.
That is. He's done a lot of simulation racing in his life, such as iRacing and a lot of Forza Motorsports. He just wants to scratch this itch in real life and stop teasing himself with the simulations. Totally agree. He's got two real-life races under his belt. He's owned a 1992 Cavalier. He competed in two local dirt track endurance races with.
Which, when you
in
said
a 92 Cavalier?
When you said you've done two real-life races, this took a turn I did not expect. I did
what,
not expect
Cavalier?
A 92 Cavalier on a dirt track. And the problem was he insured the vehicle and drove it to the event. And in event one, he broke an axle. And in event two, he blew his head gasket, and his buddy had to tow the car home. This is his only track experience. So we have to reset that for sure.
Wow. Well, his car history has been very JDM focused.
Okay.
Some small adventures with a few V6 Mustangs.
And a Cavalier.
And the aforementioned Cavalier.
Yeah.
And most recently, BMW. Currently, he owns a 1990 Honda CRX HF. Do you remember that car?
Not only do I remember that car, but that was the car with crazy gas mileage before crazy gas mileage mattered. It was getting like 40 miles to the gallon then.
People were hyper-miling their brains out with
it
that
was
thing
crazy.
Then.
And you never heard about it, but that was what it was great at. The CRX chassis was just interesting and fun anyway, but that one was like the gas mileage king.
I remember looking at him for my first real car.
Sure.
Found one. Sure. Some guy was commuting to Wyoming or something, and it had like 320,000 miles on it, and it ran perfectly.
Of course it did. Yeah.
I was like, okay, I got an Accord instead, but nevertheless, I really like those things. Well, it's been tastefully modified.
Mm-hmm.
Coilovers, a B-series 1.8 liter engine swap, polyurethane bushings all around, disc brake upgrades, but the chassis is pretty used up.
Okay.
Wrung out. It's very rusty. It's got a cracked windshield, a lot of cosmetic defects and damage all around, and something he would definitely not want to track.
And also, ultimately, probably not keep, is where this email's going.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, he also owns a 97 Integra GSR he's converting to a JDM Type R clone.
Okay.
Coilovers, a Turbo B series he's currently building in his basement.
What did you do with your weekend? I can tell you. Yeah.
This car is far from being finished, and he doesn't want to track it when he's finished with it.
Okay, all right.
Of course, you want to bring a trailer it.
Yeah, probably. Don't give the poor guy the idea. Adam, no, just enjoy that.
Well, his latest venture has been a 2012 diesel BMW X5, which has been deleted, he says, the diesel delete, and tuned.
Mm-hmm.
Is that legal in all 50 states?
I don't think it is. I don't think it's really legal anywhere.
Yeah,
but you can now coal roll in your BMW X5.
I mean, cool.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I
you weren't expecting that.
I question coal rolling. But anyway, I understand why it happens. Yes.
Well, he bought it because he thought he could pull a race car trailer with it, but that desire is changing.
Mm-hmm.
He says it's probably the quickest vehicle he's owned so far
probably,
in his life.
Yes, probably. The takeoff off the line with that,
sure,
as you've done with it, would just wreck everybody and lead a cloud of smoke in your
sure
wake.
But he's ready to sell this daily, ready to get into something more practical for his desires. So, who wants to buy a diesel delete BMW X5 from 2012 and a 1990 CRX that's been through the ringer and has a cracked windshield and a janky old chassis?
It's been modified. Well, honestly, it's probably a riot to drive. It probably doesn't look good, but goes like crazy.
Write to us at you know where. He's never owned a true manual rear wheel drive vehicle.
Okay, all right.
He also feels like he doesn't have much more he can learn from a front wheel drive chassis.
Interesting. Okay, all right.
It's all he's ever owned and pushed to the limits.
Including that Cavalier on a dirt track. I'm going to keep coming back to that because I just can't believe that was just a turn I never expected.
We need a photo.
I read that in this email and went, wait, I backed up. I read that sentence and I went, wait, what?
Scratch.
Those are the track days. Okay, here we go.
Are you ready for the budget? After selling both, he could probably do around $20,000 for a new daily.
Okay.
A new daily that fits his needs better.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe $25,000 to $30,000 if he took out a loan.
Okay.
He loves Japanese vehicles.
Love it. Okay. I get
it. He's expressed that many times.
Yes, that's been clear.
He's also owned more Hondas than any other. However, after owning and working on BMW, he says he enjoys and appreciates the engineering that goes into them. He is not a fan of WRXs, Miatas, and the renowned 86 chassis.
Guess what just left the list? Those of you clinging to the idea of an 86 free podcast just might get your wish on this one. Yeah.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
He enjoys the luxury of the BMW interior, and he loves two-door coupes and hatchbacks.
Okay, good.
He doesn't want your standard run-of-the-mill car. He's very mechanically inclined and does every task on his vehicle himself.
Love it. Okay,
including
great.
Including rebuild engines, Integra GSR engines in
his
basement.
In his basement, because that's what the basement's for. Yeah, because it's warmer in there and you got all the tools.
Exactly.
I get it. I understand. Yeah.
He doesn't take vehicles to shops aside from, you know, tires fitted to wheels. He loves European styling. His dream, did you read this?
I did,
to own a Lotus.
That's an accessible dream, man. It really is.
Yes. Or if he says, play his cards right, maybe an entry-level Lamborghini. Allow me to refine, negate that entire idea right there and put the kibosh right on that. Because short of a Yalpa, you don't want any Lamborghini.
Well,
they break.
They do break. We have seen a lot of people with brand new ones that break on track.
Snap.
And people that drive them hard and they break.
Click.
I
boom,
think
fire.
Look, I get the desire to own one. I do genuinely understand it. I think you would be able to achieve and enjoy a Lotus more.
Absolutely. I mean, Adam, short of a Countach, let's avoid the Lamborghini. Although, you know, there's a lot of Lamborghini owners who love them and hopefully drive them.
Yes,
there
for sure.
are a lot.
Definitely
right?
see them. The one thing you don't want to do with a Lamborghini that seems to be like the thing with a Lamborghini is you just started it at a car show. It's been sitting cold for hours. You just started it at a car show, and the first thing you want to do is rev it to redline as much as you possibly can, and then be surprised that it broke.
No mechanical sympathy.
Anyway.
All right. Well, he says he loves cars that handle well. He wants a car that, from the manufacturer, is fast. You know, enough power to easily beat the guy at the stoplight next to him.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Being in the Midwest, most of the old cars that he has an eye for, generally speaking, have a lot of rust issues, and he's over it.
He says, I'm over it. I love that. That's great. Apparently, you have seen plenty of rust. Okay, he also says that he is so Honda-obsessed that he feels like, I love this, he feels like if he doesn't get away from Honda, he never will. In spite of the fact that the BMW, this is the thing that's happened with that BMW in his life, is it made him go, oh, that's right. Other car companies are intriguing because he's all about the Honda. The BMW's made him go, maybe I should look around. And then he thinks, if I don't get away from Honda, I will probably only ever buy Hondas. So that's his cry for help at the end of this email.
It is. That's aptly put. Well, Adam, the GR86 is at the top of my list. And the reason being...
Sorry, really thought we were going to pull that off. I really, I, the 86 owner, hoped for the best. I really did.
Well, the reason I say that is because you said $25,000 to $30,000 if you take out a loan. For any older car, especially JDM, that you might like, it's going to be tougher to get a bank loan on anything past 10 years. Mm-hmm. You might be able to do it, but if you're looking towards a loan, brand new GR86 is going to be the easy way out. We'll just set that aside and move on.
There that is.
To the Porsche 968. It's the older equivalent to the second generation 86. It is the second generation 944 is what that is.
Yeah, it is, for sure.
So it is almost the old equivalent to that GR86.
And you just don't see them.
You don't. And
you rarely see them.
They're very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
They have more power. There are a lot of refinements over the 944s, and there still is quite a large community, and you can do all the work yourself, and it isn't a 928 that's a bloody pit.
How do you know?
I don't know.
What are you saying?
How
that's
I
would weird.
Know that.
Okay.
So, Porsche 968s.
That's good.
I like them in coupe form, and I like them especially in manual, of course, but those are the ones that are harder to find. So, I don't know if you can stay under 20 for a nice one, because you said this is a daily. I'm not looking for a project car for you, even though I know you're going to wrench on it.
Yeah, for sure.
But you need it for a daily. You already have the Integra sitting in the basement, or engine parts there out.
For sure, yeah.
And you're selling the BMW and the CRX, so you need something that... anytime you need to leave, that's going to run. Mm-hmm. Not like, well, I need to plug the thing back in and screw that back on and change that before I can go to the store and eat.
Yeah.
How am I going to plan my day here? It needs to run.
You've got an hour for making the car start. Then we'll go get groceries. Right. Yeah.
Well, since we're on Porsche, the second choice is an early Boxster for $20,000 or under.
I can see it. Yeah.
Like those. You could wrench on those. Having one that... once it's sorted, it will run.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Drive it regularly. Yeah, it'll be great. But I'm moving on. Since you mentioned BMW love, Z3s and Z4s.
Oh, okay.
But I specifically want to concentrate on the coupes of both of those.
Yeah, okay. I see it.
Because of your comment, scroll, you don't want a standard run-of-the-mill car.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So how about the shoe, the clown shoe, or the BMW, the Z4 coupe?
Yeah, you just don't see any.
Not talking about the M versions of... either of those.
Yeah, because you couldn't afford them.
But I'm wondering if you shop smart, could you get both of those because they're fun, they're interesting?
Yeah, that's good.
Yes, you can wrench on them, but they're still new-ish enough where it can be your daily.
That's a great call. I hadn't thought of that. Those are really good.
Those are the weird BMWs, but
yeah,
they're still, you don't see them all the time. And then finally, your car, Todd.
Where'd you go?
The Nissan 300ZX.
Really? Okay.
Go get one of those. It's not going to be a turbo.
Yeah, get a naturally aspirated one so that it's very reliable and cheaper. Yeah.
You said JDM. You love JDM.
Yeah.
You love older.
Mm-hmm.
Can you do 20 or under? Can you push that a little bit to get a pretty nice Nissan 300ZX that's going to run? Sure, you can wrench on it, but that's... almost not going to say this. It's almost an investment car, even though I'm not. I didn't just say that.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. They've gone up just since I bought mine, and I got mine for a bit of a deal. Because I found mine and got it for 24, and they've continued going up since then.
Yes. So you won't be getting a turbo.
If you're
manual.
Getting a twin turbo, you're going to spend every bit of $30,000 to get one that is close to sorted.
Oh,
you can
find
somebody's twin turbo for 20. I have no doubt, and it will be a mystery car. it might run great and it might explode day one. But if you're going to get
that's
one
not
sorted,
a good daily.
Yeah, if you're going to get one sorted, it's going to have to be quite
much,
a bit more expensive. Yeah,
but I know that isn't.
That's not a good plan. Yeah,
but it checks all the boxes.
I see
it's
it.
JDM. It's a little bit older. It'll be hopefully around $20,000. I could be a little bit off base there, but again, you're just
$20,000
for
naturally aspirated. Naturally you can get a nice one. You can get a nice one for that,
and it satisfies that love, and it gets you out of Honda.
Interesting,
something new. And it was fast out of the box, off the showroom floor.
Yeah, I mean, even
for
my,
its day,
totally. Even my naturally aspirated automatic was fun. It wasn't like wow fast, which the current one is.
Sure,
but it was still fun. And if you got a naturally aspirated one in stick shift, I think you'd find it to be pretty fast comparatively to certainly the other stuff you've owned.
And I think if you just got one that was decent and ran it all the time, every day, it will continue to run. Drive it, and cars like that like to be run and like to be driven.
Yeah.
So I think that'd be an excellent daily. And then you can do little things over time.
There you go. Fascinating.
Things that you know can be done within a few hours and the car will run again.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, like I said, eat, go exercise, go do your thing, whatever. Those are my choices, Adam.
Adam, this is fascinating. I'm gonna start close to home for you in my ideas, and then I'm gonna branch you way out because I feel like you're at that cusp. You even acknowledge it. You're at that cusp where this is your opportunity to try totally different things, not just rear wheel drive, but just like brands you've never done. This is that opportunity in your life.
Sure.
So I want to branch you out. A couple of things I want to say to you up front, though, and that is this: you probably haven't thought this way based on your email, but I'm gonna really encourage you. You need to not shop in your area. You
need
to shop south or southwest, Texas, California, Arizona. Shop those markets because they'll be rust-free. Go spend part of your money getting the right one from one of those markets and bringing it home.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you spend the money for you to fly down. Maybe you're doing pre-purchase inspections remotely. All of the above. We've done all of the above. So, but I think you need to shop out of your area because you said you're over it with the rust. So let's get something that if it's a little higher mileage, it's still really clean. Then you can decide how you want to sort that issue out when you get it back to Wisconsin. So that's the first thing to say to you. Second thing is, since you're a Honda fan, if you stayed Honda, the only play is the S2000.
Yeah, but
that's
keeps
the only
him a Honda.
Play. But it keeps you Honda.
Mired in Honda.
It does. So that's the reason I'm walking back away from it. It's also, for a decent one, to be right at the top of your budget. But, I mean, it would run. It would be great. There, if you said, I got a Honda S2000, I would say, of course you did, Adam. So that's
sure,
there.
Sure.
If we stay BMW, you can look at the M235i. Go get one of those.
Yeah.
Those are a little older now. Well, 228
for $20,000.
Well, but I think the early M235s might be down there. The M240s aren't going to be down there yet.
No.
But, you could get the 228 for sure. The M235 is a real possibility.
You could still finance the 235.
For your $25,000 or so, you could pull that off. So look at one of those. I think you'll surprise yourself with how capable and daily that car is. That's a great daily.
Mm-hmm.
That is a really fun car. Great rear-wheel drive. You could get it manual transmission. You would have a lot of fun with that car. I have to bring that one up. But that is me being close to home. Now I'm going to just scatter myself all other places.
Mm.
I didn't go Boxer, but I did go Cayman.
Okay, not Saab
really,
and Opel and
no,
weird
not,
stuff
not
in
that
the 50s.
Not that we're still doing dailies.
Okay.
So you get yourself a Porsche Cayman, early Porsche Cayman, like an 06, okay?
Yep.
I don't know if you can get an S. You're going to want an S. I don't know if you can get an S. It's going to depend on your market, what you're shopping for. You may find them to be older or higher mileage, but I'm going to say the key thing in buying that old Porsche is going to be maintenance.
Oh, definitely.
I wouldn't even worry you about what's the mileage. I would worry about how's this car been treated. And generally, not across the board, Porsche owners are meticulous about their maintenance. So I wouldn't stress the mileage. I would stress how's this car been maintained. So that Porsche Cayman, if you can pull off the S, that's the place to be. But I think you should look at a C5 Z06. I looked. They are still well within your budget. That's a fantastic Corvette. You've had nothing of the kind. V8 rear-wheel drive, C5 Z06 Corvette are really, really fun. Manual transmission, lots of power. Watch our American original feature film on all the Corvettes. I think you would shock yourself with how cool that car is, and you never see them. You want something that wants to stand out? That will stand out. You could go base C6, the next gen.
Base.
Which is also a good consideration. It gets you a more updated interior. You might like the more creature comforts of the slightly newer version. It's not as interesting or unique as the Z06 C5. You're not going to get any of the special models of the C6, but the C6 is an option. And then one you didn't mention that I think you should, you're a JDM guy, get yourself a used Nissan 370Z.
Love that we both went to the Z car.
It's a modern car. That's the thing about it. You can get, because that car's been the same for a decade, you can get a car that is actually
50th anniversary,
that's not Sweet. A joke. It's legitimately was the 40th and 50th anniversary car that somebody at Nissan dropped the ball so badly there. The 50th which is, by the way, a couple years ago, the 50th anniversary car should have desperately been another model, and it was still the same model.
They'll never know if we change the graphics.
Oh my gosh,
nobody will know.
But the point here is, if you get a used Nissan 370Z, it's going to feel surprisingly current. Because that car's been basically the same for a decade. Slight changes to front fascia, little tweaks here and there. But you cannot beat that engine. You're a guy that I get the sense that you're kind of attracted to interesting engines. That engine's great.
Yeah,
sounds great. Pulls great. Get a manual transmission 370Z. I think you will surprise yourself. And I'm stopping there.
Adam, if you want to go to Arizona, one of my go-to places is Plaza Motors AZ in Tempe on Scottsdale Road. Found you an 07 Porsche Boxster. Rear-wheel drive. Oh, that's an automatic. Okay, so the one above it, let's do that. It's a manual rear-wheel drive. So this is an 02 Boxster S, 82,000 miles, retail price, $19,900.
And their cars, by the way, Paul only looks at the nicest websites on the planet. He gets a different internet than the rest of us. That'll be a very nice one.
A different
one.
Internet.
Yeah, for sure.
It's only a car. I don't know. No. Oh, they've got a couple of Saturn Skies.
Okay. That's not both a bad choice either.
Both red lines.
You've suddenly bumped us into that car. That'd be a great choice. You would enjoy that car.
For $11,900 or an 07 for $17,900 with 45,000 miles on it.
260 horsepower and torque, turbo, manual transmission. That would be a great choice, too. Bravo on bumping into that car. I like that. That's cool.
Yeah, Plaza Motors AZ is the website if you want to go check those out. And write to us with your car conclusions, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com.
You've heard us talk about drive homework because it's vital to drive a lot of things when you're trying to find your next car. Knowing your options is incredibly important. And this applies to online shopping too. You don't want to search just one website unless that site is searching all the other ones for you.
That's why we love Auto Tempest. We know you've heard us talk about it before, and we hope you've already seen how far you can shop with just one search. Auto Tempest pulls from all the top used car sites at once, so you know you won't miss that ideal car.
AutoTempest.com. All the cars. One search. Tim is writing to us from Hong Kong. Some call him Tim. He's writing to us from Hong Kong. He wants a budget supercar for the city. Now, this is that interesting part of the world that is, let's be honest, not car friendly.
Indeed.
Okay, so this is actually part of his deal. He's been following us for a while. He recently completed what he feels like was the perfect three-car garage. He owns three cars in Hong Kong.
Wow.
So this is the key
Tim, you're my
Tim.
Hero just for that.
I agree. There's so many sub-questions already. I'm like, when do you drive them? How do you store them? Where do they sit? How much does it cost you? Where do you take them when you want to have a fun drive?
Send photos, Tim.
Seriously. He happens to have a 2013 BMW M135i as his daily hot hatch. We didn't get those, and we wanted them, and they're very cool.
That is really cool.
Here's the reason. That is the rare rear-wheel drive hatchback.
Yeah.
All the hatchbacks we get here are all front or all-wheel drive. And I so wish we had rear-wheel drive hatchbacks in this country to recommend to people to get the best of all worlds. You have that M135i, so that's very cool. You have a 2001 Porsche 911. That is the 996 Turbo as your sports car. Now, that is the affordable 911 because of the unloved fried egg headlights.
But they're going back up.
They're all going back up. But the 996 Turbo was quite fast.
Oh, yeah.
So you have that. And then, here's a curveball, a 1995 Ferrari 456 GT.
With the manual.
That means V12 gated manual Ferrari GT car. It's a pop-up headlight. You're going to have to look it up. It's a pop-up headlight car. This is not one of their sleek V8s. This is one of their more, you know, let's go cruising GT cars. But you have that as well.
This was the car that was the precursor to the Ferrari 612 Scaglietti.
Yes.
That then became the FF that is now the GT4 Lusso, and we'll see what happens with their SUV when they bring that out. But yes, they are known for mostly having automatics. It's kind of a 50-50 split, if I'm not wrong. But manual 456 GT, yeah, they're not the sexiest looking Ferrari ever, but it's a Ferrari V12, you're right.
V12 with a manual. That's fantastic.
Wow.
That's really cool, I have to say.
He doesn't know how long he'll keep this car. And as we said, he's in Hong Kong, which is a small, cramped city, he says, and describes it as only a few twisty roads for driving enjoyment.
Okay.
The 456 GT, although brilliant, is not the most suitable for Hong Kong.
I'm not. That's the least surprising sentence in your email. Most surprising was manual V12. Least surprising was not suitable for Hong Kong.
I love that M135. Oh, that's cool.
We're so distracted by that, aren't we?
Sheesh. Well, this is the car that would possibly go away.
The Ferrari, yeah.
He's thinking of for the replacement, and he would like our advice on the following options. He gave us some suggestions, or what else in that fun, sports, budgety supercar. It's not the full-on high-end stuff.
But it's clearly, it's a car he's got some budget for.
But he does have some budget. He doesn't say exactly what, but you can kind of extrapolate when we read this list. Mm-hmm. Audi R8 V8. 981 Cayman S or GTS,
okay.
A Ferrari F430, or a Mercedes SL63.
Interesting. This is fascinating.
Tim, first of all, thank you for writing.
It's really cool.
Really good to hear from you. Really appreciate it. You got my brain going, and I have a list in increasing order of hotness for you to consider.
Oh, good. Okay.
Because I was thinking about Hong Kong, and you mentioned, there's just a few twisty roads, and the cops probably know those roads. And
They probably met them, yes.
Probably scouted those already, so it's tough. You got to probably go farther out to go get some driving enjoyment. I also wonder if your 135i is the hot hatch daily.
Yeah.
Great. And then you can take that 911 out and that'll definitely get some looks.
Yeah. And go quite fast.
But then this dream budget supercar category, is it for driving or is it for looks?
Yeah, that's a great question. How does he use this car? I have no idea. Because
that's my question.
There's no suggestion that Tim takes road trips. If he said, I take road trips and I go on long stretches, like long-legged GT car runs, then I'd be like, oh, okay, I get it.
Right.
I'm not sure what it's for. I agree.
Is it just for like the triumvirate, the triple car garage? I've got the, I want it, or what are you using it for?
Speaking as a badly car-diseased person, would I have your garage in Hong Kong? Sure, if I could.
Yes.
But I don't understand what the usage is. I really don't get it.
That's why my list is a little bit scattered in terms of usefulness, but it's not like that BMW doesn't handle well.
True.
That's already a great canyon and track car. And then you've got the 911, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So let's start slowly.
Okay. Ease our way in.
We imagine you sell that 456 GT. Somebody else in Hong Kong, somebody elsewhere has got that car. It's a new car. You see it go away. Okay. You've got this budget, and you start out by looking at Alfa Romeo 4Cs.
Mm.
A little bit of a different thing. It's a little bit of a mini Ferrari. Your Ferrari went away. It's like half a Ferrari. Sounds great. Great for the city. Still fun to drive, even at low speeds.
Yep. Agreed.
Alfa 4C. Even the Spider, you could cruise around.
That's amazing because we haven't talked about the car in forever. And I have it on my list, too.
Do you really?
I do, because my big question for Tim is,
Stop.
If the 456 GT is too big for Hong Kong, don't we need to go smaller?
That's my question, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we could go, this is the other way you can go. You can just decide to just lean into the luxury element and just embrace the big luxury car. So, but I do think if you want something that has that exotic feel that is smaller, you wind up Alfa 4C.
I'm thinking
you absolutely do, yeah.
And it's just different enough from that BMW, agreed, the Porsche. And it's this third weird,
it is a different animal entirely.
Thing. Yes. And it depends on your mood and the weather and all that stuff. I have the GR Super on my list.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
It has that feel of supercar hotness.
Okay. All right.
I think it could be a good consideration, especially the A91 version of it. Mm-hmm. But it is automatic, and I don't know. I mean, it's kind of designed for open roads. It's a bit of a high-speed GT car.
Yeah.
But let's get nuts.
Oh, good. Okay.
Ferrari Mondial.
Oh, there you go.
You tried the 456.
Yeah.
How about a Mondial?
There you go, yeah.
Oh, I'm in love with this idea, especially if you can find the hard top.
The hard top
super
is
super rare.
Yeah.
I hope it doesn't sit in your garage needing a belt, because it usually throws alternator belts.
Needing a list follows here. Yeah.
But something to consider, because it's a budget supercar. It's a, what is that? I haven't seen one of those in ever or never. Ferrari Mondial, they're fun to drive. But if we're looking at Ferrari Mondials, you cannot ignore the first generation Acura NSX.
Sure. Oh, that's good.
Smoking hot. Rocking Hong Kong.
That's cool. I like that.
Those
that's
are
very
cool.
Good. Even
just perfectly stock. Let's say you go 95, perfectly stock. That sounds interesting to me. Putter around town like it's an Accord, and then when you get to your twisty roads, let it rip.
That's really good. I like that a lot. That's excellent.
Now, if we're spending money, let's go to my idea for a McLaren 12C.
Ooh, wow, okay.
It's not crazy, modern, new McLaren.
It's not the latest, greatest,
It's 12C, so it's budget supercar. It's still a McLaren, still great, still fun to drive.
Yeah, yeah.
But a few years old. They're about a decade old now.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. It's crazy to think
about. How about one of those? Here's a question for you, Tim. Can you buy or ship over a C8 Corvette?
Oh, wow.
You're What's rocking that HK cost? In a C8?
Hmm.
Yeah, I like that image. And finally, a Lamborghini Countach.
Whoa.
Is best appreciated when it's cruising, rolling slowly, or parked.
It is kind of a cars and coffee car. They're
Tell
awesome.
Tell me I'm
but
wrong.
But I see your point.
You're not taking Countaches to the track. Not anymore.
You're not going to do a monster long road trip. That's
right.
That's an interesting point.
So speeds in town, dream car.
Okay.
Holy cow. There's one of those.
Yeah. You can't beat that. That's a good
You're
point.
Cruising.
I don't know if he's got that budget, but that is a throwdown.
Suck up the looks. You will suck in all.
Yeah.
You will be the vibe.
Absolutely. This street was totally dead and then you drove by.
Exactly.
Now it's the place.
A Countach of any year.
Okay.
They're still so cool.
They are. That's great. That's really good. Tim, I'm really pondering the size question here because I don't have an answer on it. I'm really wondering if that 356, the problem with it is just size and usability. I see your list here. I like your list. The Audi R8 V8, you know what? The early V8s with the gated manual, that would be the mid-grade. It's like a blending of what you like about your 456 and what you like in your 996 Turbo 911. It's like a blending of the two.
It's true.
It's got the gated manual. It's got a really cool V8. It actually sounds really good. It's not a small car. It doesn't feel small. So I wonder if that works. I do like it, though. Can't go wrong with the Cayman, the Ferrari F430. Is that car going to be bored in the city? I kind of think so. I almost like...
usually bored everywhere they are.
Fair point. I kind of like the older Ferrari idea because then you don't mind driving it slow, or your Countach concept. I like that because then you don't mind driving it slow. You know, you drive a modern, really fast car slow, and you're kind of like, am I bored? Is the car bored? That does come up. The Mercedes, the SL63 is interesting, but I have a better one for you. If you can go this big, if you can go down the Mercedes line, you need to get a Mercedes GT.
That's so cool.
Now, the problem is that's not a small car. That is a car with presence. That is a car with size. But that is their 911 alternative, and it's phenomenal.
It needs to inhale some road.
It does.
Occasionally.
You can get an early one in your budget. I think that is really, if you're going to go Mercedes, that is the call. I had the Alpha 4C on there for
That's
the exact
so
same reason you did, Paul, because I do think it's all the sexy supercar you want, affordably and small.
Yeah.
And you never see them.
Absolutely.
Honestly, they are as rare as these 80s, 90s supercars. The 4C already is that rare because it didn't sell very many.
Yeah.
And people just don't drive them. And so it's like, what is that? Get one of those. So
totally,
I like that.
Totally.
And then, look, there's nothing wrong with the Cayman, but I get the sense you want a sense of occasion. I get the sense you want something kind of rare, so you need to go Lotus Evora.
Whoa.
That's the similar size of your 911.
Yeah.
It's going to feel smaller than your Ferrari. It has, again, we were talking about different feel. You've got that rear-wheel drive hatchback. You've got a rear-engine 911 with all-wheel drive. And now you have a mid-engine rear-wheel drive.
All three flavors.
You've been able to spread. Yeah. I think that spreads it out really, really well.
That's
so
good.
So in Evora, get yourself a 400 or newer. So 400, 410, 430,
Ooh.
Or the GT. Get any of those.
Ooh.
That is absolutely checking all the boxes, and I bet you it's in your budget. I'm going to stay right there at Evora GT.
Tim, please write to us. We're
Please.
Very curious.
I have
we
to
send
see.
Photos.
Where are these cars stored? What is your driving like? I'm
so
intrigued.
So many
Completely.
Questions. Nevertheless, we hope you have happy shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And let us know when you do sell and what you end up getting. EverydayDriverTV@gmail.com. Every winter, we find ourselves tracking snow, salt, and grime into our cars. Thankfully, Covercraft has a variety of floor mats to keep you winterproof.
Covercraft floor mats and cargo mats are custom fitted to your exact car and include the original equipment security grommets if applicable. They're the perfect and durable way to protect your car's carpet and add style and comfort to your interior.
Plus, you can choose from many color and material options to complement or contrast the interior colors of your car or truck. Covercraft is sure to have what you need. They offer plush carpet, Berber carpet, or even sheepskin, which is warm in the winter and cool in the summer.
Whatever mats you choose, remember to use the code EVERYDAY22 at checkout to receive a 10% discount and free shipping from covercraft.com.
Found a question from Waleed on Facebook asking about our recent experience.
Mm.
And therefore, what is the best way to get a great deal on a 90s sports car?
Oh, okay.
Do you think it's worth paying the premium for a well-maintained example from one of the popular auction sites?
Is this hitting close to home for you, Paul? you and I, just so you guys know, and there's much information to come, and there's a really cool road trip piece coming to TV and elsewhere, but Paul and I bought these cars of the past in the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Paul bought a car that ran to kind of be a project and to make his own. And I, not being a guy that wants to wrench or can wrench, bought the nicest one I could find that I could afford. Mm-hmm. So we took very, very different approaches. So yeah, please keep going.
Well, when you say great deal, Waleed, you're not going to get a great deal. If you really want it, you're not going to get a great deal. You just aren't. But generally speaking, to get a great deal, you buy the non-hot version of it. And here's what I mean.
Okay.
Either the non-turbo or you buy that cool car with an automatic transmission.
Yeah, fair. Fair.
Give to get. Mm-hmm. You got your thing, whatever mm-hmm. you want, but it doesn't have quite the spec you want because those specs, which every enthusiast love, are the ones going for big dollars. So if you got an Acura NSX with an automatic transmission or a Cayman, you know, the 987 Cayman non-S with the automatic, nobody wants those. Mm-hmm. Sure, I'll sell it to you for under 20.
Sure.
Yeah. That's what I mean. You're going to have to not load it out, not go for the juicy spec, because those are the ones, of course, everybody wants on the auction sites.
Interesting
That's
point.
What drives the price up.
Yeah.
So if you're willing to do a little bit of give and take and you got your dream car, but it's not quite perfect, you could still scratch the itch.
Fair point. That's good. I also want to say that, Waleed, you don't want to buy off the auction site if you're looking for any kind of deal. The auction sites just aren't going to be a deal. The people
it's
that
entertainment
have,
for yeah, the rest of us.
Yes, and they get everybody all excited, and then you have pride and the auction swell and the whole thing, and all of a sudden, I can't believe I spent that much.
That's, totally.
By the way, we've gotten those emails to this podcast. Like, guys, I just think I bought this. We get those emails.
Yikes.
So be careful. What I'm going to say is dig in. Use AutoTempest. Dig all the way down to Craigslist. This is what I did to find my Z. Dig everywhere you can locally or semi-locally, like you and a state away. Find the person that is selling the one they love, but they're not sure they want to get rid of. That's the person you want. Because
wrestle those keys out of their hand?
Well, because here's the thing. If somebody has a really well-sorted one of these, like really well-sorted, and they absolutely want to sell, and they believe it's pristine, they put it on the auction site.
Yeah, exactly.
You want the
they
person.
They know what they have.
Or they believe they're going to have the new record for that car, whether it's any good or not. So this is the problem with the auction sites right now.
It involves Buick GNXs.
They're all blowing up. So you want to find the person that had the car, loved it, drove it, and did anything it needed, and they are going to get rid of it, but they're not sure they want to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And then you can find a legitimate deal. Now, unfortunately, the auction sites have become so popular that in some cases, they're going to have heard what they're supposed to go for.
That's true.
And my argument there would be, if you want to get what the auction prices are, then you have to post it on the auction site. Because nobody in reality with an ad anywhere is paying auction prices. They're just not. Mm-hmm. I'll go back to your 928. We joked about this before, Paul. Since the risky business 928 sold for $2 million...
You have my car's worth at least $1 million.
All
isn't it?
Kinds of comments about how much your car must be worth. And we're like, guys, does not connect in reality. So I think you need to not shop the auction sites and look for somebody that's had one that they've driven and taken really good care of. It may not be perfect, but I bet you get one that's right.
Speaking of auction sites, I have to tease the Mecum guys just a little bit because I'm watching Mecum. And when anything American from the 60s or you know, mid 50s comes across the auction block, boy, can they tell me
stuff
I never even knew existed, like the Continental package on that year that wasn't available with this and not with those wheel spats, but with those chrome wheels and that bumper trim? Okay, you got me. Mm-hmm. And then a 2016 911 GT3 came across the auction block.
Uh-oh.
And they described it as having a sequential automatic. And I spit out my food and threw things at the TV.
Yeah, you did.
And thought, wait, guys, time out. Hang on.
Uh-huh.
Screech. It was just, I'm teasing you guys, but it was pretty amusing because, this has a six-cylinder engine. Well, yeah, but that's not how we really refer to 911s. It's not a six-cylinder.
Well, but yeah, and it's a GT3 as well. There's stuff to say.
There is.
There's stuff to say. You would think they would have somebody they could toss to that knows about the more recent foreign cars or whatever versus the muscle car.
Old or young. It doesn't matter.
It was just think you'd have a string of commentators so that if any of the commentators gets to a place where just like, I don't know that car, they can toss to whoever.
Right. Hey, Porsche guy. Hey, BMW guy. Or
Where are those people? Because you're right. It is leaned so far against it's chromed from the 60s. That's how it's leaned into big time.
Really? That's what we're going with? Sequential automatic? That's what we're going to describe and leave it there for the audience
to just
wonder.
Sequential automatic with a six-cylinder engine. Yeah, technically all of that is like it's like close to the target. You can see the target from there.
But you didn't sell me. What if I'm bidding from afar? You didn't sell me the car. You just kind of left it with a lot to be desired.
Ted Adam Green asks me an odd question. If I remember correctly, I think Ted's in Atlanta.
Yeah,
so
that's
right. So he asks this question. He says, is Texas in the South or in the West? Now, I'm not going to answer this as a Texan because, of course, a Texan would just say Texas is the center of the universe and move on.
I
am going to say let's look at a map because you know what's the center southernmost state of the U.S.? Like it's in the center of the country and it's all the way in the south is Texas. I'm just going to go with the geography of it and say it is the most south of all of them because of that, and I'm going to leave it there.
All right. Well, Travels with George J. asked you a question about your last podcast, Spirited Discussion on the Top Gun movie.
Oh.
Raised a movie question. What is the difference between the executive producer, the supervising producer, and produced by? What is the function of all of those?
Wow.
When we see an actor with one of these titles, is there a role they're actually performing, or is it just a way to swing a piece of the profits their way?
Wow. Okay. Wow. George J., I thanks for this question. There is a lot of minutia here, and we don't have the time, but I'm going to give you headlines, okay? There's a running joke in Hollywood, and the running joke in Hollywood is the associate producer credit.
Okay.
It's what you give your assistant instead of a raise. I'm directly quoting a David Mamet quote from a great movie called State and Maine, but you give an associate producer credit because, we're gonna applaud you that way. There's no money in a credit like that.
It's like giving you a title change and you didn't increase your salary.
Exactly right. Yeah. No, we'll give you an associate producer credit because theoretically that will allow you to be a producer later. In the simplest terms possible, the producer is a problem solver. They are a problem solver for their part of the production.
Mm-hmm.
And you have producers on set you may have not even heard of. Like there's the unit producer. There's the line producer who deals with the actual what are things costing on set. The line producer is there and they do math. Okay. So a lot of other producers you aren't even mentioning here. I'm going to try to go through these real quick. The executive producer typically is somebody that was the conduit to the money. They're very often an executive in the corporate level at a film studio, but they may just be the way we got to the money to get this produced. I'll give you the only down in the weeds one I'll ever give you is this one because it's one of my all-time favorite ridiculous Hollywood excess things. The Weinstein brothers, back when they were a thing, they started in the 90s. They gathered up all the big filmmakers of the time, Tarantino, and yes, they gathered up everybody you can think of. They pulled them close, Robert Rodriguez, and of course, Peter Jackson.
Okay.
And they said, what are your dream projects? This is the 90s. And they went and got the rights to all those guys' dream projects. And Peter Jackson, in the early 90s, said Lord of the Rings. So the Weinstein brothers went and got the rights to make that as a feature film. I will not bore you with the very long but yet interesting story of how it wind up at New Line, but part of the deal for it to wind up at New Line is that the Weinstein brothers, who had, please follow me, done nothing other than find the rights, pay for the rights, hang on to the rights, and produced anything really, they got 5% and an executive producer credit.
Oh.
When that credit rolls by on Lord of the Rings, the Weinstein brothers, think about the millions they got for just deal making.
I'm going to hurl.
So executive producer is typically a conduit to the money. Not always, but typically. The producer credit, I'm gonna get this wrong somewhere in here, but the producer credit's interesting because in the last few years, the Producers Guild, the actual union, started to create regulations for who can take producer's credit. And producer is a key one that you now see says PGA behind it, Producers Guild of America. You can't have that credit without a guild association because what's happening is the producers typically get Oscars. So everybody wanted to be a producer. So there are for producer, co-producer, supervising producer, produced by a lot of
Your stock price.
There's a lot of specifics now
as
to who can get those credits. But generally, if an actor is getting a produced by credit, yes, they're getting a bigger cut. Tom Cruise is the best example. Nothing happens without him being in the film, and he is a producer. So if an actor is helping getting the film made by lending their name or whatever, they will get a producer credit and a cut somehow. And a lot of actors now have PGA after their name. There's ways to achieve that.
I've noticed that, yeah.
Yes, there's a cut of the financing. But generally, what you're going to happen, Tom Cruise being the best example because he's the most extreme example, if he's attached to a movie, money will come.
Oh.
Money that might not have ever shown up prior, but Tom Cruise is going to be, I will give you a check.
Sure.
This is how he produced it. He sure. got them through that gauntlet. Some other producers are really good at just gathering a cast or hiring visual effects folks. There are producers that they're essentially solving problems to get the movie made, and they get a producer credit, which often comes with cut. Somebody that's listening in Hollywood knows exactly the definitions of how you get specific credits. I don't know that much.
Hmm. Wow, fantastic. Adams Drives asked me my thoughts on BMW fake headlights from an article written by Jason Torchinsky, who recently wrote about them. Yes, he wrote a very interesting and well-written article about the fakery that goes on with headlights, especially like he says in BMW and Volkswagen headlights, where it appears that everything works. All four headlights across
sure.
the front
yeah.
of the car,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
two on each side, they all do stuff. Well, one of them might just be the angel eyes for a BMW, mm-hmm. or maybe just the parking lights or some other, you know, turning cornering lamp or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this is no different than the other stylistic effects around the car. The last generation, 10th generation Honda Civic is a great example of having plastic events that don't do anything but look like it does.
Supra does that too now, yeah.
Supra, the list is long. Since cars had bodies on them, car designers were doing this to make it feel this way or that way, you know, a sportier feel, a more luxurious feel, like I've talked about. Luxurious wheels have a lot more spokes, nine or more, so many thin spokes, whereas a sport wheel has five.
Sure,
You know, extreme sporting
wheel.
Things like that, you know, long flat roof indicates a long limousine, you know, sedan kind of shape, more curve, like a Cayman. Has a very sporty, fast kind of flavor. Same thing with all the details, and it does come down to headlights too, because headlights are and will always be the face of the car, the brand, and that is the big differentiator. No matter what the lighting technology does for us in the future, it's already made leaps and bounds and enabled headlights to be very, very small and even more effective than they ever have been. But think about designers still using lighting technology and understanding, okay, we've got this new tech. How can we integrate it? The lighting elements are very tiny. We don't even need to do hardly anything. But if the light weren't large enough and having that signature look that matches the styling of the times, it wouldn't look right.
Mm.
So the BMW headlights that Jason calls out reflect the technology of the times. And as lights, light technology gets smaller, I mean, you know, pinholes that can light up a, you know, stadium.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure. But that doesn't really look good. That's not the face of a car. It's not the eyes of a car, which is what sells cars and what consumers relate to. Mm. Just like in motorcycles, when you look at the seat, that looks like a comfortable bike to sit on. It's the first thing you're looking at. Same thing. The face of the car, that is why you're buying the car. You like the look of that car. Mm. So very in depth. But there's fakery everywhere, including the headlights. Kind of is what it is, but as long as they're, you know, the lighting technology is pretty amazing, then let's go with it.
Matthew Brown says, "What's wrong with me?" After a recent relocation, he and his wife each bought new cars to them, and he loves his new car. He loves his wife's new car, but he can't help keep looking at cars.
Ah.
He said, "Has my car disease progressed to terminal status? Is there a cure?" Matthew, you have reached normalcy. For this group, for us and for those of us listening, this is what we all do. I mean, Paul and I, here's the thing. This is so insane. I know it's insane. I know it suggests I have a problem, and this is why we call it the car disease. Paul and I are in different press cars every week. We are buying a separate car, currently Cars of the Past, that is a fun car to cover for the show, to have for a year. We've done it now 3 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
That does not include the fun cars we personally own, and we both have SUVs we use for other things. And I was on looking at cars today.
Of course you were.
I was too. Looking up cars. Like, what are those running right now? And not because of the podcast. Just, you know what? You know what I haven't looked at in a while? I haven't looked at those. You know, what are the prices on? And we're talking about, you know, what could we, when we're done with, by the way, we've barely started the Cars of the Past series, and we're talking about what's next.
Oh, yeah.
Which will be like a year from now.
Oh, yeah.
So it's the madness. Look, the water's warm, Matthew. We're all in this together, and thanks for joining us.
Austin G456 saw a Car and Driver article saying the average new car price is almost $47,000.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, do we think this is sustainable? And how are people affording cars at these prices?
Yeah,
well,
okay.
You're right. People are financing. They're financing longer and longer. Have you noticed your terms, the options available from your credit union or your bank can go 84 months or even longer now?
Yeah.
And it brings that monthly nut down for sure. But yeah, cars have gotten more expensive. And the amount of new technology, whether it's tried and tested or not, that's what people are looking for. People want latest and greatest and new style. And it's amazing to me how much everybody, even who is a non-car enthusiast, still likes the luxury. You still like the feeling you get from the new car, the new tech, and you've got the newest, latest thing. And nowhere is it manifested more than a car.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, iPhones and watches and eyeglasses and shoes and blah, blah, blah. But you got a new car. This is my special new thing. This is me.
You're right. That's good. Corey's asking about the picture that you posted and the thing we just did, which was the Maverick versus the Hyundai Santa Cruz.
Utapalooza.
And he's saying he wished we could throw the Ridgeline in for comparison. Now, two things happened. First off, we wanted a Ridgeline. We absolutely asked for one. We wanted to put it with it because it's obviously the pioneer in this space. And we weren't able to get one from Honda at the time, even though they did tries. So we appreciate their efforts. It didn't happen. What's interesting, though, is I did have the opportunity. Now, we've driven the Ridgeline in all of its forms, including the new restyle for the new front end. And I actually had the opportunity to get in one a couple days before we shot as well. And here's what I find fascinating about the Ridgeline by comparison. And I'm curious if you agree with me on this, Paul. I would like to have had it, but I actually think having been in it recently and been in these other two that we had for a while, I feel like the Ridgeline is the alt for bigger trucks. It's like you didn't get an F-150, you got a Ridgeline. Now, it's not quite as big as something like the F-150, but almost is. And it actually has a significantly larger bed than both the Maverick or the Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
And it has a lot more storage than both of those. So I feel like if you are a person that really uses a truck bed, but you're willing to go unibody, which that's a small group of people, I think the Ridgeline becomes your choice. Whereas the Maverick and the Santa Cruz feel like they're more your alt to your Frontiers and your Tacomas and those kind of, that the Ranger. The smaller trucks feel like they're the direct competitors for, now I realize the Ridgeline straddles both. The Ridgeline is kind of aimed more at those as well. But I do feel like you could be a person who wants to not be in a full-size truck, but feels like you need that bed, and you could probably get away with the Ridgeline. I don't think the other two could pull it off.
Yeah, there's one stylistic differentiator that really matters. It sounds silly, but it really matters. When that Ridgeline first came out, it didn't have a separation between cab and bed. Honda was eviscerated for that.
Yep.
And then they pushed the Ridgeline into what looks like a truck.
Yeah.
Your eye tells you that's a truck. It's got a cab and a bed. Mm-hmm. There's a line. There's, I see how the bed just was put on the chassis. And it has the appearance of body on frame.
And it isn't, yeah.
But it isn't. And then these two Utes come along and throw that out again. Mm-hmm. And well, now the Tesla Cybertruck is the big daddy, big Ute.
No, it's the big,
if it ever
it's the big mystery
happens.
Is what it is. But,
but nevertheless, these two do not have that separation, which opens up a whole lot of styling opportunities to do things differently. But that's what people see, but I'm not sure they're realizing that's the difference because there's no line, there's no separation of panels. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing just one shape, which looks less truck-like and more car-like, Ute-ish.
Yeah.
That's the differentiator.
The Ridgeline has probably more space than the other two in the front seats, but believe it or not any more space in the back seats, but a lot of bed space.
Jared, our buyer on Facebook, asks if there are any great automatic cars.
Mm.
Cars that are made better by a great automatic. Yes, there are. As a matter of fact, the Alfa Romeo Quadrifoglio, Giulia Quadrifoglio, stands out as one of the best automatics I've ever driven.
I wouldn't mind a manual in that car, but we haven't ever driven it that way. But the auto is fantastic in that car. I do agree with that. Yep.
Look, many BMWs now are equipped with automatic transmissions. They're the 8-speed. Mm-hmm. Same with Hyundai's. The GR86 is okay in automatic form. It doesn't quite bring out everything you want out of that chassis, but some people will buy it that way. And then, of course, the PDKs and DSGs, which are really just sequential automatics, aren't they?
That's what we've heard. I heard that on Mecum, actually, and now I think it's
Where did I hear that again?
Yeah. Nubjut on Instagram says, is an A4, Audi A4 worth a look in manual from 2018? I would say yes, if you can find them. We did a piece in the winter a few years back that was that generation of Audi A4, if I'm not mistaken, versus the prior RS4. And it was kind of a fascinating discussion. They both had the A4, that the newer one had a manual. And it was a rare one with a manual. If you can find one, they're actually pretty cool. But actually, I think it may have been an S4 that we had. The problem is that the A4 is the base engine. The S4 gets a lot more fun. There's nothing wrong with that. Be careful of mileage and maintenance, but otherwise, I think it's a worthwhile choice.
Rubs Up has a great idea for a season 11 episode.
Okay.
See this? Is it time for a greatest hits 2? The high-performance Mustang EcoBoost, now available with MagnaRide, and replace the Fiesta ST with the new Civic, and the new WRX and the Toyota 86 chassis are both evolved. I like it.
Four-car pieces are hard in our 22 minutes worth of television, but it's a great, great episode. Maybe it's a YouTube thing. Who knows? Jayhawk Trev says he's assuming we've seen this. Yes, we have. Ford, he didn't ask about Ford. I'm going to bring Ford in here. Ford recently has been coming down on dealers for markups.
Mm-hmm.
And GM has just put out a nasty saber-rattling letter about do not charge market adjustments on the upcoming Z06. This is what it's going to take. It's going to take automakers going, do not do this to avoid this madness. I mean, we've met a few dealers who are staunch about not offering markups. They are the exception, not the rule right now. It's going to require the automakers saying, don't do this, for it to not be a thing.
Thank you to our TV sponsors, Covercraft.com. Yeah. Use the code Everyday22 for 10% discount, free shipping. And also GriasGarage.com. You can use the code eDriver for 15% off liquids and 10% off everything else. And Haggerty with her Drivers Club, DriverShare, MotorsportReg.com, and GarageAndSocial.com. And of course, CarParts.com. We thank all of those. Support our sponsors because they're supporting us and helping us bring new TV episodes and more content to you guys. Also, big thanks to PowerStop Brakes and Nokian Tires, too, for joining us on the Cars of the Past series.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it, guys. Write us your questions, your car debates, Topic Tuesdays, car conclusions, too. You know where to write us. Cheers, everyone.